This is The Stark Truth, hosted by Robert Stark, brought to you by StarkTruthRadio.com. Robert Stark is an American journalist and political commentator. You can listen to his podcast at www.StarkTruthRadio.com.
This is Robert Stark. I'm joined here with Matthew Pegas, and we're going to be discussing The Joker.
Yes, good to be here. Good to talk about this interesting new film.
To think about it, I don't think I've actually seen a film in theater. It's been about, like, 4 to 5 years.
Gosh, wow. I mean, I do go to them. I saw Tarantino's. I actually go to quite a lot. I think there's been a few good movies this year. I think Quentin Tarantino's new film is good, and I like Midsommar a great deal too. But this one was certainly good, as we'll discuss. What do you think it was about this that got you to go to the theater for the first time in 5 years?
Well, first I was hearing just all the kind of controversy online with the kind of the negative press from the establishment media, and then all these different people on Twitter sort of taking the Joker up as like a moniker. Well, I mean, a lot of kind of like the stereotypical kind of like meme types of like the Groiper profiles. And but then I actually read some more reviews, and it seemed to be kind of a great movie in the vein of compared to Taxi Driver. And I mean, I would describe it as a dark comedy. And
yeah,
It is definitely unique and stands out compared to a lot of other films, and it's interesting. What's the film director's name? Is it Todd Phillips?
Todd Phillips.
Yeah, that's right.
He
Todd
also
Phillips.
Directed,
yeah, the kind of stuff. He does kind of like a lot of lighthearted, kind of sex themed comedies. He did The Hangover. Old School with Will Ferrell. It's very, very kind of lighthearted stuff, and this is a much. It's still a comedy, a dark comedy, but it's a much darker, more serious. Serious film.
Yeah, definitely a serious film, but also definitely very funny in parts. I do think the whole thing can be watched as a comedy. Parts of it definitely had me laughing at times, which some around me may have deemed inappropriate. But I mean, I think even if the subject matter was very heavy at times, that parts of it were just very funny to see him, to see Joaquin Phoenix, to see the Joker. Do just some of the ridiculous and cringeworthy things that he did in the first half of the film, and the excruciating social situations I did try to keep on the sunny side of life while watching those, and definitely laughed.
Yeah, definitely humiliation plays a big role in this, and humiliation is definitely a big theme in our culture, but not so much of this film. It's kind of it takes place in a fictional city, Gotham City, loosely based on New York. I think filmed in New York. It takes place in the early 80s, but even the era is a little bit vague because there's like a lot of 60s music, but it's supposed to be the early 80s. And yeah, the theme of humiliation is a big theme. And today, in our culture today, it's more of an issue online and online culture and social media. How if people get humiliated online, and that definitely can have a really destructive psychological effect and completely tarnish someone's social status.
Yeah.
That's obviously a big theme.
Humiliation, I feel like, is a very pertinent theme. Maybe it's a timeless theme. It's certainly a big, maybe one of the most pertinent themes in the era that we're living now, I would say. But I can't really think of any other movie of this size, or even half or near this size, that's dealt with humiliation so head on. It tends to be a lot of the movies these days, the popular ones at least, are, I mean, and movies have always been escapist, but a lot of the ones, you know, when you think about what's really popular. It's a lot of superhero movies and stuff, and the aspect of kind of escapism or living vicariously through the characters you see on screen is, if anything, even more strong these days than it once was. But this movie obviously goes against that and is very much you're basically watching a guy get humiliated really throughout the entire thing. I mean, you could say there's a payoff in the end for him, but up until the bitter end, the theme is his humiliation and the kind of redemption through that humiliation, maybe, but definitely, you know, it's one fuck up after the next for him.
Yeah, because either, like, generally there are these, like, cult classics like Taxi Driver, but most, like, the common themes in films are you have themes about someone who is, like, socially successful and high status, or you have someone who's kind of, like, either a loser or kind of, like, an average guy who has, there's, like, a happy ending for them and they achieve some degree of success. And those are more kind of Todd Phillips's earlier films. Probably are going to be more stuff like that. Or he did something like Road Trip, which was just one of those kind of cheesy sex comedies that were popular like in the early 2000s. So yeah, those were typical of that era. And I guess I think someone was saying that there was someone on Twitter, I forget who it was, but they said that like those kind of sex comedies were popular back then. But now we're kind of like, we're in the era of the incel.
We are in the era of the incel, and we're also in the era of Me Too. I don't mean that as a completely negative thing about Me Too necessarily. But that these things are touchy, are touchier than they used to be. And you both have people who just aren't getting any sex. That would be the incels, given, you know, for reasons of social isolation, which is obviously on the rise. And then you have also, on the other hand, people who are more better socially adjusted. But even within that realm of culture, there's issues because of, just bad relations between the genders and immense paranoia. So I do think that your observation is correct, that that the types of, even The Hangover probably couldn't really date these days. And I actually did hear, and I don't have the quote for this, it was, you know, I heard it secondhand, that Todd Phillips decided to stop making comedies and start making movies like Joker because of the current moment and political correctness. And he has, I mean, I'm sure, I have no doubt that he's left of center, but he's spoken out against political correctness and is certainly doing that now, given the backlash to Joker.
So yeah, there's obviously that, and sort of like a lot of those films, like the lighthearted comedies or the Marvel films, like they represent a kind of like a very kind of superficial era. But I think we are in an era we're going into an era that's much darker. People are more black-pilled, and I think film reflects that. As what you were saying was interesting about the Me Too movement, and this is a little off-topic but relevant, is I remember I did that show with Count on Californication, and that era when Californication came out, basically, like, the first decade of 2000s, like, that's really when the culture, like, reached sort of the peak of, like, hypersexualization, and that was, like, a peak in hedonism, and ironically, the Me Too movement has actually kind of pushed things on an almost more conservative direction.
Yeah, if by conservative you mean everyone kind of being more of a pussy and just, like, not really living, which I don't think is necessarily what conservatism should be, but yeah, no, I get what you're saying. What was I gonna say? About Californication. I mean, that show, it was the 2000s, but it only ended. It really only ended in 2014, I believe. So a lot has changed very fast. I think you're right that we're heading, well, I think unmistakably, I think everyone knows this on both sides, since around 2016, we've been moving in a much darker direction. However, I really don't think that has been reflected in TV or movies very well or at all, especially movies, not well at all. And I think that what's remarkable about Joker, and the movie does have flaws, which we'll talk about, and I think that I have criticisms of it, but I mean, I do think it's very good and very satisfying, and I would say that to me it's the first movie of what you might call the Trump era that reflects on the status quo in an interesting way. Every other attempt, and Hollywood is, obviously Hollywood's obsessed with Trump, but all every other attempt that I've seen, and I think I have reasonable, a reasonable amount of reasons to think that this would be across the board, just based on the billboards I see and the trailers I see, that the types of commentary on Trump that have come out of Hollywood thus far have all been extremely more, you know, the same as the media, basically, extremely moralistic, cringeworthy. I'm just trying to think of some examples. The recent season of Stranger Things, all these shows and movies have their sort of Trump avatar, who's this cartoonish, sometimes literally cigar-smoking, mustache-twiddling villain.
The villain in the movie is kind of loosely inspired by Trump.
But in the, what, in Joker?
Yeah.
You could look at it both ways, and I think that's
what
I'm
saying. Well, maybe you could say like a liberal, like a kind of liberal caricature of Trump, because Trump...
With
Trump, Trump actually made an effort to use some populist rhetoric. You can, like, I don't really want to get into Trump's actual policies, but as far as Trump as a symbol, Trump can, to some people, Trump can symbolize populism. This character, the billionaire who's running for mayor, he's just like an outright plutocrat who openly says that, like, poor people are lazy, that he refers to them as clowns.
Well, yeah, I've seen people speculate about this, and I how could it not be an allusion to Hillary Clinton calling all of Trump supporters deplorables? So I think that Todd Phillips, I think, is smart and played it. I think he made a good movie that took some risk, but I actually think he played it extremely, extremely safe, that he could have gone way further with this movie. But I think he was alluding to that Hillary Clinton comment. I think he probably, if I had to guess, I would say there was to a degree consciously, he tried to make the mayor character, I don't remember the name, he tried to make the mayor character be someone who you could see both elements of Hillary and Trump, to take the 2016 dichotomy, or basically people on both sides. I mean, also, you can think of this, how could he not be thinking of the yellow vests a little bit, too? You know, is this Emmanuel Macron? You know, I think that, yeah, he's a Trump figure, but he's not a Trump figure in the way that I've seen in a lot of other Trump-era Hollywood propaganda.
And, yeah, as far as Todd Phillips goes, like, he's... I get the impression that he's liberal, but he's not like a dogmatic Hollywood liberal. I think he has a side to him. He's not hyper political. I think he's more interested in culture and entertainment.
In aesthetics. I would like to see more interviews with him. But if I had to guess, I work around Hollywood and stuff, and have for a couple of years, and pay attention to this stuff, and I think that I know the type. It's pretty much the furthest right you can even remotely comfortably be in Hollywood, and even that's not a very comfortable existence. It's a kind of cultural libertarianism. Bret Easton Ellis is another good example of someone who represents this, where he's not actually conservative or right wing, but he is very anti, I guess, SJW, for lack of a better word. I see Todd Phillips as part of that vein too. These are people who don't care that much about politics, but recognize the threat from the left to culture.
And the thing is, there definitely are left-wing themes in the film, like about class warfare, the rich oppressing the poor. It's just that it's left-wing in a different sense, but it's not woke.
It's definitely not woke. I also think it's kind of clumsy in as far as it is left-wing. I don't blame Todd Phillips for this. Again, my argument about it is that he played it safer than he probably could have. I think he really tapped into a zeitgeist with this film that no other film has dared to tap into, which is a real shame. Which is the zeitgeist of the incel, of 4chan, of the loner, of the school shooter, even. He, I think, consciously tapped into that zeitgeist and also related it to the same zeitgeist that brought us Trump, that brought us the LOS. So in that sense, it was very clever. However, I think he did an almost cartoonish job of kind of making it so clear that he was just talking about class and the poor guy you pass on the street. So I actually found some of some of that stuff to be a little on the nose and a little bit, it felt like a place filler, like he was like, you know, just playing it safe and not really delving as far as he could into some of these social issues by simply making it, like the slogan of the protesters literally, kill the rich. Like, he couldn't think of something more nuanced than that. And then as Bronze Age Pervert opines on Twitter, the ultimate message of the film seems to be, oh, more money for liberal programs for mental health. So there's those criticisms. I kind of lost my train of thought here. I guess what I was trying to say was, I think that that Todd Phillips Sears cites really interesting themes, but in terms of the ultimate political quote unquote message of the film, I think he did a really sort of simplistic job, shall we say. And I think that he maybe needed to, because if you really got into some of the causes of these, I think that Todd Phillips tapped into a really interesting zeitgeist here, the zeitgeist of the incel and 4chan, etc., and tapped into some really interesting social problems. However, I think he, the overall political message he presented was overly simplistic, and I think it was a way of tying up those themes in a way that wouldn't get him into too much trouble. He made it about, you know, oh, the rich versus the poor, the mentally healthy versus the, you know, not mentally healthy, rather than really tapping into what causes some of the kinds of the isolation that you see in the Joker character. With that, he really would have had to, he wouldn't necessarily have had to touch on race, although the movie
does
allude to race.
Well, he does, because there is the theme of the Latinx youth who beat him up in the beginning, and
as Greg Johnson pointed out, there's a number of kind of unsympathetic black characters as well. So it does kind of allude to race in an interesting way.
It's implicit. Like, there's a scene where he's by himself alone, and he's in that crowded bus with a lot of
black people.
And the thing is, it's not explicitly racial, but it does. It captures a feeling of alienation. If you're part of the white, like, proletariat, and you're living in a like lower class non white area, you're gonna feel a strong sense of alienation.
Yeah, and like sticking out. And that's the magic of cinema, is that you can do that without having to say anything. He just shows it. It is realistic, because we all know that there's people who do live in societies like this. So no one can. I mean, people are saying stuff. People are criticizing him for it. But at the same time, it's hard, because he's just telling a story visually. He's just showing, you know, what experience would realistically be like for someone in the society in which his movie's set. So he does get away with that, and I do think he made some bold allusions there. But I guess what I was going to really try to say was what the movie, probably, you know, what it should tap into but doesn't, what I think Taxi Driver actually does a much better job of tapping into back from the 70s, is the crisis of masculinity. This movie could and should have gone, you know, really, really, I guess, into that and kind of shown that as a kind of issue more than it did. But again, instead, where it could have gone deeper into that, it sort of got feel good a little bit, especially in the scene with what's his name, the late night show host, where
Robert De Niro.
Yeah, I mean, I think Joaquin Phoenix should probably get, not that I care about the Oscars, but he should probably get an Oscar for the performance. It's amazing, and so the most memorable scenes are some of the close up ones on him. But even his acting, I think, couldn't quite save that sort of climactic scene where he's kind of whining about how rich people just, you know, walk by the poor, sad people without you know, smiling or something. I guess that, to me, that was just an example of that sort of oversimplistic, feel-good, yeah, call it some kind of a liberal.
Talking about kind of like the root causes of what causes this massive social atomization, can you think of something like, if hypothetically you were the director, what you would have put in the film that would have accurately captured that?
Well, that's where I have to say, I mean, I'm not, I think Todd Phillips did a great job. In his position, I probably would have done the same thing. I don't know. I think he probably played his cards right. I think the movie's, and I think the commentary on it shows that, I think it's about as controversial as it can afford to be. But that said, I don't know. I'd have to think about it. But I definitely would I definitely would make it more. What I shy away from is the sort of basically the people who protest in the end. It looks like the gathering of the Juggalos, quite literally. And if I were directing it, it might look a bit more fascistic, I suppose.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
So right wing instead of left wing, a little bit more of a uniform.
The it's also kind of like the protest. It's a sort of a leftist in the sense that they're against the 1%, but also a kind of anarchist theme. Like they just want to bring down the system. They want to cause chaos. And the Joker is a symbol of anarchism, and not so much
it's
a vision for building a new civilization. Just bringing about chaos.
Totally. It's like the some of the people in the protest. It's like that annoying kid from high school who like has a mohawk and paints an A on his Doc Martin boot or something. It's not that interesting to me. But I still think it's a great movie. I mean, I still think that there could be a kind of social uprising that looked more like that. So in that sense, perhaps it's
well,
realistic.
Well, we did have Occupy. Occupy Wall Street is probably the closest that we've had that's come to that.
I think Occupy Wall Street would have liked to have thought of itself more like the protest in Joker, and would have liked to thought of itself more like the Yellow Vest, but I think in reality it was more like, rich kids.
So there's been this massive appeal to dissident rightists, and it's interesting because we've talked about all these themes, like a lot of the film does overlap more with the left, but it's kind of interesting because basically the left has become so out of touch, it's abandoned. The woke left has abandoned all its core principles, that basically that you have these so-called far rightists kind of identifying more with a film that would have traditionally been left-wing, which is a fascinating phenomenon.
Yeah, definitely. And it's like it doesn't matter. You know, the Daily Stormer praised this film. Other people are more critical, like Countercurrents and Bronze Age Pervert were the examples I saw. But some are obviously really praising it. And the fact that it has a, I guess what you'd call an explicitly left-wing message about economics, at least, is simply not really regarded, because we all know, because of that first part, because it taps into the zeitgeist of the dissident right. Even if the political message that Todd Phillips kind of stamps onto at the end, even if that message is not of interest to the dissident right, the zeitgeist is still there, and that's what matters the most. And that's what matters the most in art. I mean, it's not a treatise, it's a piece of art, and the acting and the scenes that it sets taps into that zeitgeist, and in that sense, it's a big success.
So you have to look at the people who liked the film and who criticized it. So as far as leftists go, Michael Moore actually really liked the film. He described it as a masterpiece. And Michael Moore was a big icon of the anti-Bush left, of the anti-Iraq war movement.
Yeah, I mean, as annoying as Michael Moore is, I actually like him a lot more than most woke people. I mean, he's kind of fat and annoying, but at the same time, I think he, you know, practices what he preaches much better, and he has more of a sense of humor. He's that traditional, like, white guy, Midwestern, Bruce Springsteen listening to type leftist.
So the people who dislike the film and the establishment, these different articles from Time Magazine,
The New Yorker,
Salon,
to punch a wall.
I think Salon was it.
I didn't read all of them. They make me too angry.
Let's see, Joker. Let me look it up really quick. Joker, Salon. Okay, so I'm looking at Salon. There's been mixed reviews from Salon. Oh, there was a post from Salon that says a harsh indictment of neoliberalism and gangster capitalism. So, yeah, that's more nuanced. But I'd say just overall a lot of these sort of, I wouldn't call them like leftists, but sort of establishment, like neoliberal, woke, center-left types who really dislike
the
film.
Exactly. Establishment, center-left, is because what the movie does is threatens their sense of self, threatens their sense of hero, heroism. They think of themselves as heroes and as woke, and this movie definitely doesn't cast their type in a good light. The other thing I'll say is that obviously, like so many of us, the people I rub shoulders with on a daily basis, they're all very liberal, and some of them very woke even, but everyone I've talked to about this movie loved it. So it really is just kind of coming from the top, these establishment critics, in the media, etc. These are the people who don't like it. It's a populist hit across the board. Which is interesting and dismaying to think, you know, it's just another example of that echelon of society, the journalistic class, the media, whatever you want to call it, just being completely out of touch with even average people, even average people who in theory respect them, don't agree at the end of the day on certain things like this.
So let's look at what their main arguments were. So the idea that he's kind of angry just because the character that they're glorifying, an angry, alienated white male. And that's our argument, but that's been a lot of leftist figures could be described as angry white males as well. So that's pretty ridiculous. And then I think another thing is they're saying that because he shares traits with a lot of these mass shooters, and that they're portraying people who become mass shooters in a sympathetic light. That's another argument that the establishment has put forth.
I don't know who the hell came up with that. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but Marc Maron, again, you know, he was in the movie. You know, Marc Maron's extremely liberal, but will defend this movie, and said something which I thought was smart, which is that the people who are saying this movie is going to cause a mass shoot, and lo and behold, it hasn't. It's been out for a week. It's not going to cause a mass shooting. But what Marc Maron said was that these people who are arguing that it will cause a mass shooting are going to inadvertently cause it. I think he's completely right. I don't know how they could be so irresponsible. I mean, it's not even like there was even a prank threat about this. So I don't know who insisted on starting that rumor, but whoever they are retarded or else actively malicious. I don't know.
Well, if you look at the main character, at Arthur Fleck, he does share a lot of the same personality traits and the same background as the same profile as a lot of these mass shooters.
So many of them do these days. I don't know what they want us to do with that.
Yeah, exactly. a lot of people do. People who are totally nonviolent, of course. But this character, he does eventually lash out in violence. But I think what's important to point out about the film is one of the most crucial things is that there's no moralistic narrative of good versus evil. It doesn't say the character, it doesn't condemn him, but it doesn't endorse him either. It's just telling a story, because most films that do involve any sense of conflict or violence do so through a moralistic narrative. This film basically is totally amoral.
Yeah, well, that's one of the criticisms I saw, and I mean, goddamn these people. Like, you know, these extremely liberal people just, you know, getting really whiny about, oh, it's nihilistic. You know, they really are just doing exactly the same thing that conservatives did in the bad type of conservatives did in the 80s and the 90s. That's a complaint, is that it's nihilistic, that it doesn't, they're literally complaining that it doesn't uphold their moral narrative, because they, you know, they can't even countenance the idea that their moral narrative might be one that not everyone shares, or that it isn't common sense or somehow written into the fabric of the universe.
So yeah, as far as like distant rightists, I think it doesn't really matter like whether it's right wing or left wing. I think they're just attracted to just kind of the theme, the zeitgeist, as you said, as people who are angry and alienated. I think that, I mean, that's like a major ongoing thing everywhere.
People get hung up on the school shooter thing, as if this came from nowhere, as if this is just toxic masculinity finally blooming for whatever reason, as if there aren't social causes of these issues. But there are social causes of these issues. There are social causes that are, you know, beyond, that are completely outside of the realm of the liberal moralistic narrative. And we all know this. Even liberal people know this. But movies just haven't dared to touch it because they haven't been willing to think outside the realm of an increasingly narrow moralism. This movie does, and for that alone, no matter what flaws it might have, I think it's really remarkable.
And as far as the responses from the public, overall it's much more popular with millennials and Gen Z. Probably young men more so than young women. I'm sure a lot of women enjoy it as well.
Yeah, I mean,
but younger people,
I saw it with three women.
Younger people probably more than older people, but I'm sure obviously some older people enjoy it as well, but I do think it really speaks to the youth of this country.
I agree with that as well. I mean, I would even say on Greg Johnson's review of it that there may have been an element of an age gap there. I think it is a very Gen Z millennial movie because you just see a loser for 2 hours or 3 hours, however long the movie is. It's just you see that and you see bad things happening to him and him doing bad things. And I think that millennials and Gen Z, given the world that we've been born into and inherited, are just way more comfortable with that. That's relatable to them, to us. Whereas I think older people, no matter what their outlook is, they do expect something a little more compelling than that.
Yeah, and the character's mom captures that in the film. So she believes in the system. She believes that billionaire running for mayor is going to look out for her and make the world a better place. And she's morally outraged when he makes the comment where, so there's those bankers that attack him in the subway, and he ends up murdering them, and obviously she has no idea that he did it, but he makes some joke about it, and or kind of sympathetic comment, and she gets really morally outraged.
Funny. Yeah. Okay, well that whole idea of what's funny and what's not, that's obviously a key theme too, and that's extremely pertinent to generational differences and to current online culture. I've been thinking about the image of the clown a lot because this fall, you know, two clown-themed movies came out. It 2 and this. And I haven't looked at the numbers, but I imagine these are two of the highest grossing films of the fall. Like, what is it with clowns being so in the water? And of course, I relate it to the honk pill meme, which is probably the most popular meme on, if not 4chan, then like dissident right Twitter anyway, of 2019. There's something about that image of the clown, and there's this famous TikTok video too where a girl puts makeup on and says, "Who's the clown now?" It's so in the water, and I really think there's something about that image. It sounds ridiculous, but I think there's something about that image that just speaks so much to where our generation and Gen Z really just feel we are as a culture, where, you know, everything just seems ridiculous. People say they're one thing but actually are the other. I mean, just, you know, ridiculousness upon ridiculousness until there's no more relatable quote than, you know, "I used to think my life was tragedy, but now I realize it's comedy." I think that, not to sound too hyperbolic, but I think that's what millennials and Generation Z are living through. And I think that's being reflected in meme culture and the kind of absurdity of memes, which older people don't get. And this thing with clowns, too, I think it ties into. And I really do think it's an example of it's something that, again, across, you know, political and cultural lines, a lot of people of millennial and below generations just get that stuff and find memes funny, find absurd memes funny, find TikToks funny, this absurd stuff. And older generations don't get it. And some of them kind of try to get with the wavelength, but it's a different level of sort of comedic nihilism.
Yeah, and a lot of this culture, like all these trends that you were bringing up, they've permeated the online memes, but this is the first example of a recent Hollywood film that's tapped into that, because most of Hollywood is so out of touch with the zeitgeist until the release of The Joker.
Yeah, totally. And it makes you wonder, like, how connected is Todd Phillips? I mean, I don't think you need to actually, you know, be literally educated in this stuff to know what the zeitgeist is and to execute upon that. But I mean, even when I was seeing trailers for The Joker, I was like, oh yeah, it's like the Pepe with the clown nose. Like, I was really excited to see. I hate superhero movies, and I don't really like movies that take place in the universe of them at all, but I knew that I wanted to see this. One, because I love Joaquin Phoenix. He's probably one of my favorite actors. And two, because I could tell that they were going for something with this clown image and tying it into the political moment in a way that I knew was going to be compelling, and indeed it was.
The aesthetics of the film are interesting. So Gotham City is based on New York City in the early 80s, so it's roughly a little bit after the era of New York and in Taxi Driver. Yeah, very, very kind of dark, very gritty. I remember, like, I don't know if you listened to that show I did with Robert Brenner on his gritty old Times Square.
I think I did a while ago, yeah.
Tours, but there's a lot of footage of the area around Times Square. Probably with what it would have looked like in the early 80s. A lot of, like, Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of a cool kind of vintage neon and a lot of older signage and just cool. Also, there's, yeah, the cool sort of neon at night, like the neon signage. Cool footage of the different, of the subway stations, of the elevated trains, and also these kind of really gritty, like, public housing projects. And some of it looks like it's probably, like, in the Bronx or maybe Harlem.
Yeah.
And,
oh, yeah, it's definitely really well done.
Yeah, just in the aesthetics, capturing what New York City must have been like at that time, and
yeah,
then the
like
cinematography
bigger,
and the music added to that as well.
Yeah, it's like a slightly bigger, maybe significantly worse version of New York at that time. Which I think is usually what Gotham City is supposed to be in the Batman universe. But it was really well rendered here. Maybe more compelling to me than other Batman movies I've seen. Not that I've seen any of them for maybe 10 years, but really well done. And some of the aesthetics actually reminded me a bit of, I don't think you saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood yet.
No,
but interestingly, yeah, some of just, I guess this, you know, similar period, the late 60s versus 70s.
But that was
80s.
In L.A.
But in L.A., but still, just certain aesthetic flourishes, and even just like the font that they put the title in, and the end scene. There's a kind of, both films have a sort of a fairy tale nostalgic touch, and it makes a lot of sense in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. In Joker, it's
and the weather, like, it's usually at night, or it's dark, gloomy weather. Like, they intentionally do that to keep the kind of a depressing tone.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely a depressing tone. But yeah, there was little flourishes in the movie of something a little more exuberant. And it was kind of hard for me to place where that was coming from. But I think it's because, fundamentally, it is a dark comedy. I mean, just like the last scene, for example, when he's running off and he's being chased, there's almost slapstick, and then I believe it says "the end" in some kind of loopy font. Just reminds you that it's a bit of a clown movie at the end of the day.
It will be interesting to see if this will just be kind of an outliner and a kind of a cult classic, but a kind of eccentric film that stands out, or we will see an actual trend in Hollywood.
Well, hard to say. I mean, it's hard for me to imagine anything really going well in Hollywood, at least in terms of movies. But I do think, so it's hard for me to imagine this will really, you know, usher in a new era of bolder film. However, in and of itself, it is a bold film, and it's been a hit, it's been popular, and maybe it will kind of open the door for other filmmakers to be more bold. Well, I guess we'll have to wait and see.
What do you think about the whole significance of mental health? I mean, there are different points of view. Some people are going to say that it's important to invest in mental health.
Yeah.
And then there's a segment of dissident types who will say that's a way of kind of controlling people. And that does play a major theme in the film. And in the film, the message is obviously that mental health is crucial, because he's not getting adequate treatment because of budget cuts.
Budget cuts, yeah. It's a big theme in the movie about, you know, receiving therapy and even psychiatric.
And as far as the portrayal of a social worker, the African American woman who's a social worker, she's not necessarily she's not portrayed as a bad person per se. I think she's just doing her job, and there's a few moments where she shows maybe some degree of decency. But she is sort of symbolic of, like, a broken system.
Yeah, she's symbolic of a broken system. I'd say that's exactly it. She's not portrayed as being bad. She's also not being portrayed as necessarily being all that helpful. But she is portrayed as being sort of necessary, but underpaid herself, and therefore her performance is probably compromised. Overall, the message is definitely that that mental health is important, and in that it joins a lot of voices in the culture right now. This morning I was scrolling through Instagram and I saw that Andrew Yang had posted an image and written, there is currently America is currently in the grips of a mental health crisis. It's hard.
Yeah, and we were talking about kind of how this, we're entering this era of despair and mental health problems like depression, anxiety, suicide, drug, like prescription drug abuse, like, and obviously the shootings, are they tie into this as well. where we are in a mental health crisis and a crisis of despair.
I think that you can disagree about the usefulness of psychiatric drugs, disagree about the usefulness of therapy, but that there isn't some kind of mental health crisis, or maybe you'd want to use a different word, maybe it's a spiritual crisis. The fact that there isn't some kind of crisis that is described by mental health crisis is something that I actually do think pretty much all of us agree upon. So it's interesting. Yeah, obviously the movie I think highlights that in an important way. I don't know if I think that the answer is you know more money for mental health programs or what the answer is, but I definitely agree that it's a problem. I'm definitely not the kind of right winger who's just like, oh, everyone just needs to toughen up. It's a broader problem.
Yeah, a lot of right wingers do have the mentality people just need to toughen up, and they're dismissive of, on a personal level, individual level of personal responsibility. They might make fun of someone for seeing a therapist or being on prescription drugs, or they'll tell someone, or they'll say, you hear this with a lot of self-improvement types on social media, they'll say, like, get off prescription drugs and just lift weights, and I don't really want to, like, it all depends, like, it's more, I think there's a lot of complexities.
There's a lot. It's an extremely nuanced issue.
Yeah,
it's an issue worth being ambivalent on.
There are right-wingers who would advocate cutting back mental health care on fiscal conservative grounds. So, obviously, my opinion on this is obviously it is very crucial to fund mental health programs. But it's at the same time, can't be a substitute for something like an actual organic community. Like it's not sufficient enough by itself to address this whole issue of social atomization.
I think what you said hits the nail on the head, and it's exactly what I would say. I think that given the state of things, something is better than nothing, and that some people are very genuinely helped by this kind of thing, but it definitely can't be a replacement for what people really need, which is organic community. And I think that also just depends on who your therapist is. Obviously, there's a lot of wacko, very left-wing therapists and psychiatric organizations out there, and obviously I don't think their effects are good. And also, there's a lot of over-prescription and misprescription of drugs. However, there's also definitely people who need those drugs. So it's nuanced across the board. And on the fundamental fact that there is a mental health crisis, I think that how could anyone disagree? And I think the movie does a good job of pointing that out.
We're getting close to the show. Is there anything else you'd like to add about the film?
Oh, I guess just that it's interesting the role that, I guess, black people play in the film. We talked about this earlier.
Yeah, we did. A lot
of reviewers have talked about it. But, I think it's another example of Todd Phillips knew he was playing with fire culturally. So he tried to cover his tracks a bit there are some more unsavory sorts of African-American characters in the movie, but at the same time, it's also, almost principally, like, the woman that he has a sort of crush on is black, and I do think all of that was on purpose. Oh, and a lot of the protesters are black, so I think there's this very... very, very, very conscious choice. The movie takes place in a world where race doesn't matter.
Yeah, class is the big divide. There's a divide between the rich and the poor, but they show the protesters, and they have the black proletariat and the white proletariat marching together against the 1%. So, there are subtle racial themes, but I'd say that's a side note. I'd say class. The whole issue of the class divide and class warfare is a much bigger theme.
Yeah, and I think that's a conscious statement on Todd Phillips's part that I think it's a bit of a fantasy that race doesn't matter to the extent that it doesn't matter in the film. However, it's well intentioned, and I think Todd Phillips is arguing that this is how it should be. These people who are at the bottom of society should overlook race and join together, as so many people of the left have argued for centuries. I think that in all of the left criticism of the movie, I didn't see anyone really acknowledge that, but I really do think he was making a very anti-racist statement with that.
Yeah, and I'm sure he is anti-racist.
Yeah.
But
the
thing is, even if he is anti-racist, like the woke types are so insane that they'll pick the most obscure, subtle thing, and they'll try to say that the film... I think some people have tried to say the film is racist.
Oh yeah,
just because of the scene where the youths attack him.
Which they're not even all youths of color, by the way. I remember at least one or two of them are white, so I don't really know what they're playing at. But that infuriated me. I mean, the New Yorker article, yeah, that was the first thing he said. This was, I believe he wrote, said the guy who wrote that said it was like an allusion to the Central Park Five or whatever.
Oh yeah, I remember.
Absolutely
that.
Retarded to imagine this bearded old white guy sitting in a theater, even thinking of that is infuriating. But anyway.
Yeah, it was a great film, and I'd recommend, if you haven't seen it yet, go out to theaters and see The Joker.
Yeah, I recommend it as well, and this is one of those rare instances where you can do something interesting that you can also talk to a lot of people on the street about, because a lot of people are seeing this.
Yeah, definitely a lot of interesting discussions will come out of it.
Yeah, I guess my final thought would be, this is the first time, maybe in my life, that I heard about a movie breaking box office records. I don't remember exactly what box office records it broke, but I heard that it was doing extremely well financially and shattering some record or other, and it actually made me happy to hear that. Usually when I hear Avengers Infinity War or whatever broke is the highest grossing film of all time, it depresses me like nothing else. But this is the first time where I heard about a movie's financial success, and it actually made me happy.
Matthew Pegasus, it has been an excellent show. Thanks for being on.
Yes, it has. Thank you, Robert. Talk to you soon.